Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, get in there, talk about www.com, and you go click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
Who loves you, baby?
Respect my authority!
You are some messed up white people.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
Jerry, just remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Ooh, and that's how everything in Washington, D.C. works. It's not a lie if you believe it. Good morning and welcome into the Friday edition of The Daily Perspective. Hi there, I'm Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host. Glad to have you along as we wrap up a week of this podcast and Facebook Live broadcast. It's really, really good to have you along. Thanks for being there. Thanks for sharing with your friends. Thanks for growing the family. And just generally, thanks. I appreciate the fact that you are there and that you are helping to share this little, this pokey little podcast with the people you know and increasing our family size somewhat. It is the Friday edition of the show. It's been a loony week in the real world, and a lot of us are looking forward to the weekend where we can take a deep breath, let it out slowly, prop up our feet, and do all the things we couldn't do all week long. So, I don't know about you, but that's how life is for me. I get to do the things I didn't get to do all week long, provided the weather permits. Hopefully the weather will permit, and we can get some things accomplished this weekend that we probably should have done before the weekend. Oh, man, oh, man. Speaking of the lies coming out of Washington, D.C., there's an interesting video that's popped up in my social media feed, and I want to share the audio with you. It's an illustration of how the mainstream media parrots a set of talking points. I've talked about this before, and we've had other illustrations before, but this one is new.
This afternoon, the wheels feel like they're coming off of Donald Trump's presidency on the policy front as well.
I wonder who else will say this.
Wheels have got to fall off the cart, whether the cart is Trump or whether it's Carson.
I think John Kasich could become the one man who can actually derail Trump. If he comes close tonight and beats him in Ohio, I think the wheels start coming off.
The wheels have actually been coming off the campaign.
Republicans, seemingly the wheels coming off the Trump train.
The wheels have come off of Trump.
Trump has been reeling. The wheels are coming off the campaign.
Sensing a pattern this morning, the wheels keep coming off the Trump train.
You know, it's fun to watch the wheels come off the Trump car.
It's when all the wheels come off.
The wheels seem to be coming off.
Walls are closing in. The wheels are coming off the bus.
We don't know how far the wheels come off inside the White House.
They're reporting that the wheels are coming off.
The wheels are coming off of this presidency.
Are the wheels and the guardrails coming off?
There's a palpable sense that the wheels are coming off inside the White House.
A very big sense inside the White House that the wheels, to some extent, are coming off.
The wheels seem to be coming off the bus.
This feeling that things are coming unhinged, the wheels are coming off.
The wheels are coming off of things here at the White House.
We talk about the wheels coming off the presidency from the start.
What about this narrative, Douglas, that, that the wheels are coming off the Trump administration?
The phrase we keep hearing over and over again is that the wheels are coming off in the White House.
Doesn't it imply that there were wheels?
Trump's wheels are coming off on his core initiatives.
When we refer to the echo chamber, this is what we're talking about. When you hear me or anybody else in conservative talk or social media referring to an echo chamber, this is the kind of thing we're talking about, where a talking point is made and it gets bounced around and used everywhere. Now, those little sound bites came from during the campaign and before Trump won and afterwards. And the wheels coming off, it'll pop up from time to time. And then it's you know, you've seen those nature documentaries of prairie dogs popping their heads up out of the holes. It's just like pop, 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 pop everywhere. They're all saying the same terminology. They're all using the same words. And this is why you cannot trust the mainstream news media, because they don't think for themselves. They're being, I hate to use this word because it sounds so paranoid, but they're being programmed. They're being scripted. they're being handed talking points. And when they're confronted about it, they deny it, and they claim to be doing something very noble. They are the Fifth Estate. They are the press. And they are protected by the Constitution. Yes, yes, they are protected by the Constitution. What they do is protected by the Constitution, just like our freedom of speech and our right to keep and bear arms are protected by the Constitution. But when you abuse something like that, and you use it as a platform to disseminate falsehood because it conforms to your biases, then you are abusing your freedom of speech. You are abusing the freedom of the press. And sadly, it's not the exception to the rule anymore. It's the rule. That is the crazy train that the mainstream media is chugging along today. And if the wheels are coming off of anything, it's coming off of the mainstream media's crazy train. Because more and more people like you are waking up to the fact that what they're getting, the information they're getting from the evening news when they get home and unwind at the end of a day, is not reality. It's deeply biased. It's opinion journalism, but it's not labeled as opinion journalism. And it's interesting that those in the leftist, progressive, mainstream press condemn conservative sites and channels and will not identify the difference between their opinion shows and their hard news shows. Because let's use Fox News, for example. Fox News is leaning further and further toward the left as the days go by. Odd stuff is happening. Odd opinions are making their way into the news that you wouldn't have heard before. The business about being fair and balanced, they're more fair and balanced than everybody else in the cable news business, but it's becoming less and less so. At any rate, the left wing of the news media point at Fox News and talk about them not being fair and balanced. They talk about them being opinionated. They talk about all of this stuff that they're implying that their news, their hard news, is biased to the right. When in fact, it's actually not. It's very centrist. Now, there are opinion shows, and each of those opinion shows does express a leaning to the right viewpoint, but those opinion shows have leftist guests. They have Democrat, liberal, progressive guests who come in and comment, who spout their views. If you watch, what is that in the afternoon? Now I can't remember. Is it The Five? I think that's the name of it. I don't watch enough of it to know, to be honest with you. When Juan Williams is on the show from time to time, I would like to take Juan Williams out and just jack slap the dude, because he keeps spouting the talking points from the left. And some of it you have to be insane to believe. But that proves the point, that the balance is there. You don't find that on the rest of the mainstream news media. You just don't. What you find is the token conservative guest. A lot of them are progressives. And those who actually do express a truly conservative, realistic viewpoint are shouted down, not allowed to continue thoughts. They're argued with. They're berated. They're treated very poorly. And you don't find that, except every now and then Greg Gutfeld will go off on Juan Williams, which is entertaining, but you just don't find that in the conservative circles. Generally speaking, conservatives believe in the freedom of information. We believe that more information is better. We believe that if you have an opposing viewpoint, we should put it out on the table. Let's listen to what you have to say and talk it out. Conversely, on the other side of the aisle, on the flip side, the leftist, liberal, progressive, Democrat side of things, we can't have that. Nope, we can't have that. I refer to the story we had yesterday about the elderly man in the Starbucks wearing the make or a coffee shop wearing the Make America Great Again hat, who was confronted by the Mohawk sporting hard liberal wackadoodle, screaming at him, trying to get the rest of the people in the coffee shop to scream at him and to shout him down and to run him off. She was not interested at all in hearing anything about what he thought or believed, because her mind was made up that he was dangerous and that what he believes is dangerous, and everybody who sees life the same way he does is a Nazi. That is fascism. They accuse conservatives of being fascists and shut down their speech, prevent them from speaking on college campuses, and generally try to keep anyone from hearing what they have to say. That's fascism. Dissenting thought cannot be allowed in a fascist society, because there is a danger that someone may actually listen, examine, be honest, and believe. And if that happens, then leftism crumbles. And that's what's happened to socialist societies around the world, is eventually people start realizing, you know, this is not everything they promised it would be. I'd like to examine some other options. And what happens, if you look in the communist countries, the histories of them, is that they have to do that research in secret. They have to buy books under the cover of secrecy. They have to get research material, in back alleys and the like, because if they can't do it in public, you can't do it in the library because those information sources aren't available. You can't do it on the internet because those internet sites are blocked. So you have to get your information illegally. And what happens when you're caught with it, or you're caught accessing it, is that you are punished. And ultimately, you may just disappear. And this is the kind of mentality we have in America today on the left. They are so afraid of people learning the truth that they're trying to shut the truth down at every turn. They must continue to lie in order to maintain their status quo. They must continue to say the wheels are falling off, so that their followers, those who just accept what they see and hear on the evening news, will believe the wheels are falling off. You see, this is why so many liberals were shocked that Donald Trump won the presidency. They firmly believed that there was no chance of him winning because the leftist press told them he couldn't. Their polling said he couldn't. Their experts said he couldn't. The news people said he couldn't. All the way up into election night, they said he couldn't. And when he did, they were all very subdued and shocked and dismayed, because they were convinced he couldn't. Their information flow said it was not possible, because they were suppressing the truth. And you and I, people like us, we were seeing the pictures of the Trump rallies and the thousands upon thousands of people who were there. We were seeing the pictures from people who had been there, not from the news media. They weren't reporting it. We were finding online pictures from people who had been to rallies and the thousands upon thousands of people who were showing up to see Donald Trump. And we compared that to the hundreds of people at the most who were showing up to see Hillary Clinton. And we knew we were not being told the truth by the mainstream press. We knew. And when he won, we weren't surprised, even though they were. They tried to suppress the facts because it didn't conform to their desire for a leftist to win the presidency. And they failed because people have been catching on. They've been catching on to the fact that they're not being told the whole truth. Oh, sure, they may be given the facts, so to speak, not all of them, but they aren't getting the truth. And as a result, people have stopped trusting the mainstream news media, which is why I tell you almost every day, don't trust them. Find other sources to get your information. Dig and develop a good sense of what is true and what is not. It takes a little work. It takes a little time. But it's worth it. Because work is required to make yourself and keep yourself free. You have to do the work. You are listening to The Daily Perspective. It's good to have you along. I'm your sometimes humble host, Mark Congleton, driving the crazy bus, the crazy train, so to speak. It's a kind of a dull gray day in our neighborhood. Hopefully the sun is shining where you are, wherever you may be listening, or whenever you may be listening, because we have a bunch of people who listen to the podcast version rather than the Facebook Live version each morning at 9 o'clock, 8 central. On the Mark and Mac Show Facebook page. But it looks like we're going to get some rain today. I guess we need it. That's good. Come on, bring it. It knocks the pollen out of the air, and I'm all for that. Hey, thanks to those of you who've signed up for the newsletter. The Daily Perspective newsletter goes out each morning right after the show. You get my show notes. You get my links to the stories. Occasionally, I'll have little comments between the stories as well. Just I make little notes to help me remember. Don't forget to touch on this, that sort of a thing. Because I have a brain, you know, I have a mind like a steel sieve. It just holds back what it needs. So I have to have a little reminder from time to time. And don't forget to talk about that. Mm-mm-mm. Hey, I talked about doing the work just before the break. And I don't want to drop that and just walk away from it. It's very important to do the work. Everybody who is successful at anything knows it takes work. It takes work. It takes hard work, and it takes smart work. It takes hard work to learn which of the work is smart, by the way. So you have to do the work. Learn to learn. I mean, it's a lot like school. If you don't do the work, you're going to fail. If you do the work, if you learn to discipline yourself, if you learn the routine, you learn how to go through the steps to make things happen, then things begin clicking, and before long, you're a genius. You've done the work, and you've pulled it off, and you've got the grade. The same applies when you're learning about how to discern what is true and what is not true that's coming out of this incredible vast array of sources of information that we have today. The internet is a wonderful thing because it gives you a window into information you cannot get through the mainstream news media because they're biased, and they present everything as it relates to their bias. But you also have to be careful when you're on the internet, because there are a lot of sites which go off the deep end in both directions. So you have to develop a good sense of what is realistic and what is, what is honest. And that's the thing. I use that word a lot, honest and honesty. Because you have to be honest with yourself in order for your life to be right. You have to be honest about life in order to be sane. You have to be honest about politics in order to understand that a lot of politicians are not honest. And honesty is extremely important. So you have to look at all of this through a lens of honesty. You have to be honest about your own life experience. You have to be honest about what you have learned. And I will be honest with you about this. Sorry, but that gets easier as you get older, because you've seen enough and been through enough in life to realize when something is bull and when it is not, if you're honest with yourself. Now, if you continue to delude yourself throughout your life and tell yourself things just to make yourself happy because you don't want to change, or you don't want your life to change even though you know better,
then odds are you're not going to succeed at seeking the truth when it comes to the political world around us, because you're just going to accept what you want to make you happy. And there are a lot of people that are doing that, and a lot of people that vote that way. And in all honesty, one of those people is Rosie O'Donnell. Oh, I know. It's been a long time since we've talked about Rosie. But Wednesday, she declared that President Donald Trump will soon be done after the Southern District of New York goes after him. She said that in her latest social media meltdown. She said, "We'll get the Mueller report, then his taxes, then the fun begins, probe into all his dirty business. SDNY, that's the Southern District of New York, will do what it does, and Don the Con will be done." And then she hashtags, "Release the full Mueller report now." By the way, Rosie, that's not going to happen. There's too much confidential information. There's too much sensitive information. There's too much legally protected information in the Mueller report. It's testimony taken under oath, and you can't reveal that stuff. It's what the Democrats are doing when they're demanding the release is they're posturing, and they're doing it for dimwits like you, Rosie, because they know you'll just eat it up and repeat it. And you don't care to know the truth. You don't care to know how the system really works. You don't care about our legal system. You just want what you want. So you're going to pound on your table and scream your brains out until you can't scream anymore because you've lost your vote. But you're not going to get the unredacted Mueller report. You're just not. And I seriously, seriously doubt that anybody on any committee in Congress is going to get the full unredacted report, because we know that these people are idiots and they leak things to their political advantage. If it happens, they'll leak it. So we can only hope that the legal system exercises a bit of sanity. Now, we went through this whole thing with the news media and them talking about the wheels falling off the bus. Well, many celebrities predicted President Trump's imminent downfall was coming from the Mueller report. O'Donnell, Rosie, like other stars, openly accused the president of treason. The report was completed last month, and according to Attorney General William Barr, there's no evidence of any kind of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. Trump also was not charged with obstruction of justice. And remember that Mueller didn't recommend any further indictments. He said he didn't see any reason for any further indictments. Now, the guy who did the investigation, who has seen every iota of the information, has said, he's shrugged his shoulders and said, "Well, I can't see any reason to indict anybody else in this." But the Democrats, of course, they're posturing for their witless masses, and they're saying, "Ah, we're going to find more." That Southern District of New York, that investigation, which, by the way, in case you didn't know, the reason that they parceled some of this out to the SDNY is because they're not under the same restrictions as the Mueller's investigation was, and they can do some things that he could not do. What they're hoping to do is to dig in and find any source of dirt possible. And even if it's innocuous, even if it's something that is as simple as I talked about yesterday about how you estimate values of things on taxes for different purposes, they'll use that. Even if it's something like that, they'll say, "Yeah, well," and they already are saying, "Well, he declared that the value of this property in California was that you could put a whole lot more houses on it than it's actually partitioned for." Well, yeah, that's how real estate development works. And he's saying there's 68 stories in the, or 68 floors in the Trump Tower. No, there's a difference between how the terminology works when you're talking about where the elevator stops and the height of certain things. We talked about that yesterday, but they won't make that distinction. They'll just throw it out there. "Ah, it's dirty. Just like they did with his comments on the bus that were recorded and everybody was in shock he's a womanizer. All of that uproar was him talking. He was talking about groupies, women who follow celebrities and throw themselves at celebrities and do anything and everything imaginable with those celebrities just because they have a psychological problem that drives them to chase celebrities, stars. It's been going on for as long as there has been anybody who steps in front of an audience of any kind. Politicians go through it. Actors go through it. Rock stars, musicians of all shapes and styles, they all deal with it. Just look up groupies and you'll see what I'm talking about. There's some bizarre stories about what happens. And that's what he was talking about. But they made something just horrible out of it. And this is what they're hoping for in the SDNY. They're hoping that information will come out that they can use to further demonize the President of the United States simply because he won and their candidate didn't. The same people who said he was dangerous to America because he may not accept the results of an election. Remember when he said he might not, he'd have to see? You and I both knew what he meant. He knew that there would probably be shenanigans, and he would want to investigate those shenanigans and get to the bottom of them because he was dealing with a lot of crooks. His eyes were wide open. But the same people who accused him of being dangerous to America because he wouldn't accept the outcome of an election are now refusing to accept the outcome of that very election. They're all on board the crazy train. The wheels are coming off, and there's no telling where it's going to end up. But I will tell you this, people like Rosie and those like her, they will not stop the insanity as long as he is in the White House. It will continue and continue. And we should all thank them because they're driving more people to the right. This is The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. Good to have you along today. I know I say that a lot, but it's true. It's good to have you along today. Hey, just a heads up. Coming up in the next segment, the last segment this morning, I'm going to play you some audio from testimony before the Kentucky State Senate a couple of years ago, I think. And it has to do with a topic that's pretty sensitive to a lot of people. And there are some descriptions in that testimony that are a bit graphic. I just want to give you a heads up because it's about abortion. And I want you to hear what someone has to say, someone who is making a huge impact today. And I'll tie the pieces together. I'll tie it all together for you when that's coming up. Now, let's get back on the crazy train, because I gotta be honest with you, the crazy train is filled up with a lot of people, and here's the latest. There's a gender studies professor. Now, if you want to make a living, a decent living, you probably don't want to go into gender studies. I mean, you probably don't. Anyway, a gender studies professor discussed the racial implications of time. She did this during an NPR interview last week and argued that if time had a race, it would be white, and that white people own time. Yep. Speaking to host Guy Raz for the TED Radio Hour episode Confronting Racism, Brittany Cooper, associated professor of women's and gender studies and Africana studies at Rutgers University, expounded on her theory regarding the racial politics of time. Cooper's conversation with Raz was centered largely around a 2017 TED Talk she gave on the topic. Now, remember, for progressives, for liberals, everything is about victimhood. That's why she frames this as the racial politics of time. Because race, racism, and victimhood. See how it ties together? During her TED talk, Cooper said that white people own time, citing as evidence the black community's use of the phrase colored people time, a long-standing joke about black people's purported perpetual lateness. She even suggested that her own penchant for punctuality stemmed from her mother's reaction to racism. Let me just make an aside here and relate sort of a personal thing. I think you and I, you know, if you've lived long enough, you've seen this actually happen in real life, where there's something happening and you're there beforehand because, you know, you need to get there beforehand to get a decent seat or whatever. And you notice that the people coming in, either when the event starts or after it starts, sometimes halfway into it, they're all from the African-American community. And this is a phenomenon that it just happens. It just happens. There was once many, 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 many years ago, not just once, but a handful of times, the church that my wife and I were involved in had a community-wide service. We'd do this, I think about once a year we'd do this, and there were our church and other churches nearby, black churches, white churches, and we had choirs coming in, and it was a pretty big deal. And every time we did it, every year, the event would start, and the folks from the black churches would show up after the event started. And they would show up in the middle, and they would show up, they would come in and fight their way down, work their way down aisles for empty seats and stuff like that, and after it start. So this is something that she's right. This does happen. This is not just something that's being made up. Even today, where my wife and I go to church, it happens almost every service. We'll look up and there's somebody walking down the aisle looking for a seat way down close. African-American people coming in, sometimes 20 minutes, halfway into the morning service, looking for a seat. And usually afterwards, because we go to an early service and we'll be at breakfast afterwards, we'll say, why not just wait for the next service? You're just, 20, 30 minutes away from the next service starting. Why not just wait? Doesn't make any sense. Don't understand it. Now, moving on, let me back up. She even suggested that her own penchant for punctuality stemmed from her mother's reaction to racism. Quote, I personally am a stickler for time. It's almost as if my mother, when I was growing up, said, we will not be those black people. So we typically arrive to events 30 minutes early. Then she declares, if time had a race, it'd be white. Raz, the host, asked the university academic to explain. She says, so when I say time has a race, I'm saying that the way we position ourselves in relationship to time comes out of histories of European and Western thought. And a lot of the way we talk about time really finds its roots in the Industrial Revolution. So prior to that, we would talk about time as merely passing the time. You see where she's going here? After the Industrial Revolution, suddenly we begin to talk about time as spending time. It becomes something that is tethered to monetary value. So when we think about hourly wage, we now talk about time in terms of wasting time or spending time. And that's a really different understanding of time than, like seasonal time or time that's just sort of merely passing. She said, the host asked her about her comments in 2017 in which she said that although we treat time as though it is timeless, it's actually bound up with the plunder of indigenous lands, the genocide of indigenous people, and the stealing of Africans from their homeland. She said, when white male European philosophers first thought to conceptualize time in history, one famously declared, Africa is no historical part of the world. He was essentially saying that Africans were people outside of history who had no impact on time or the march of progress. When a person, usually a white person, according to her, accuses black people of being stuck in the past, they're evidencing the racial foundations of time. Do I really need to go any further? This article goes on for paragraph after paragraph after this. but I really don't think I need to, because you see exactly where she's coming from. Rather than living in today, rather than appreciating where we are today in this world, she must tie everything back to the past. She must find a foundation for victimhood and trap herself and everyone who agrees with her in the past with their victimhood. She talks about time being tied to money, because now we say we're spending time. And I don't think anyone who is rational and sane actually thinks about it that way, unless it is directly tied to your income or your business. If it is tied to your income, and I know this from my own personal career, because there was a time when I did voice work and would stay to studio, and my time in the studio was worth a certain price per hour. And I would be in that studio for X number of hours, and I would be paid X number of dollars per client per hour, with a minimum of an hour. So, in that sense, if you took 2 hours out of my day and made me late for my studio appointment, time related to money. But not when I'm with my wife, not with the family, not on vacation, not in any way, shape, or form otherwise. And I think most sane people would agree. You don't equate time and money unless it has to do with your income. You compartmentalize. But to say that it is racist, to say that time is owned by white people, that's racist. To frame everything with race is racist. And it's also a form of enslavement when you think about it, because you are chaining yourself to something that happened in the past. And I might add, in the past, when sensibilities and normalcy was different than it is today. Slavery, as horrible as it was, and is, because it's still on today, was normal at one point in the past. And in some countries today, it still is. But people like this professor aren't concerned with dealing with those nations who still perform slavery, who still embrace it. They're concerned with demonizing the nation we live in. That's what they're concerned with. If this woman were truly concerned about the impacts of race, the impacts of slavery, the impacts of the dehumanizations of certain races or types or peoples, then she would be up in arms about the way people are treated in certain countries which still embrace slavery. But no, she's talking about white people, and she's talking about black people, and she's directly tying it to today. What's really going on is that you and I have learned what it means. We've learned the value to live by schedules. We have learned what it means to start and stop things at set times. We have learned that that little bit of organization is necessary to everyday life. And so, we live by schedules. It puts us all on the same page. It keeps us united. It keeps us united. And not doing so divides us. And certain people don't care They live life by their own schedule, and it doesn't matter to them how that impacts anyone else. So they're late to everything. That is disrespect. And that's all it is. This is the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective. Hey, did my voice just crack? Wow. I can't blame pollen. Oh, no. Mark Congleton here, hoping you're having a great day and looking forward to a great weekend. Hey, listen, just to clarify, I'm not poking at the black community in general, and I'm not trying to demean anybody or demonize anybody, except for this one professor, this one person who is seeking to blame white people for everyone's problems. And including in that is the concept of time and schedules and appointments and the like. It's insanity is what it is. It's disrespectful to everyone else and then blaming everyone else for your own choice to be disrespectful. That's all I'm saying. I told you a little bit ago that I have some audio I want to play for you. And this audio comes from, I'm not exactly sure of the date it actually happened. It hasn't been, let's see, there is actually a date in the corner of the video, but I'm not going to pull the video up right now. At any rate, Abby Johnson, her story is the basis for the movie Unplanned. Abby Johnson was the youngest clinic director in the history of Planned Parenthood. She worked for Planned Parenthood for, I believe, she states in the audio, I think it was 8 years or so. And she counseled people. They had scripts for everything. There are videos out there. You should actually just search for her on YouTube. And you'll see interviews with her where she talks about how she trained her staff on how to deal with any issue, even religious objections. Well, God's a God of forgiveness, isn't he? Don't you think he knows what you're struggling with? Don't you know that he'll forgive you for doing this if you think it's wrong? And I actually was watching that video and my wife was in the other room and she said, wow, she sounds more like a car salesman. Very astute. Because car salespeople are trained how to overcome sales objections. And Planned Parenthood workers are trained how to overcome sales objections. It's sales. Now, Abby Johnson testified before the Kentucky State Senate. And before her, a representative from the ACLU and some other people got up and testified about abortion. And everything they said was basically false. And then Abby Johnson steps up and is introduced. And she had to say this.
My name is Abby Johnson. I worked at Planned Parenthood for 8 years. I was an abortion clinic director. And I listened to the testimony from the opposition of this bill, and I want to sort of go through some of that interesting testimony that we heard and many non-factual points that were made in that testimony. One thing that I kept hearing was that, there's no exceptions in this bill for any sort of rape or incest. Let me be clear. Even if they were, the ACLU wouldn't support it. Even if there were, Planned Parenthood wouldn't support this bill. So the fact that they're even bringing that up is really intellectually dishonest. Abortion can never on its face be safe, because in order for an abortion to be deemed successful, an individual and unique human being with a beating heart must die. That can never be safe for that individual human life. I want to talk specifically about what a first trimester abortion is and what it looks like from a person who ran a Planned Parenthood abortion facility and was there for 8 years. First trimester abortions are by and large the most common abortion procedure we see in the United States. A transvaginal ultrasound is standard procedure inside of every National Abortion Federation clinic, which includes every Planned Parenthood clinic. That transvaginal ultrasound is done for primarily one reason, to determine how far along the woman is in her pregnancy so that we knew how much to charge her for the abortion. After the ultrasound is performed, the ultrasound machine is rolled away. The doctor comes in, who, by the way, has no conversation with the woman before the abortion. The fact that many people say abortion should be a decision made between a woman and her doctor is laughable. There is never a time where the abortion doctor goes in, sits down with the woman, and goes over risk, alternatives, and benefits to abortion. It does not happen. The doctor starts performing the abortion. He's going to insert into the woman's uterus, into the cervix, metal dilation rods, graduated metal dilation rods. He's going to dilate the cervix enough so that he can insert something called a suction cannula. That cannula looks like a straw. It is graduated. It gets bigger depending on how big the baby is in the womb so that the head will be able to fit through that suction cannula. He's going to insert that suction probe inside of the woman's uterus. Ultrasound guidance is not used. That is not the standard protocol inside of National Abortion Federation or Planned Parenthood clinics. He's going to take that probe and he's going to blindly poke around inside the woman's uterus until he thinks he has enough blood and tissue in a glass jar. That glass jar is going to go into a lab called the POC lab. POC in the medical community stands for products of conception. The products of conception is, of course, the baby. But you can't say baby inside of the abortion clinic. So we said POC or POC, or if the staff was feeling funny, they would say that it stood for parts of children. After all the parts were accounted for, the POC lab technician would dump everything out into a glass baking dish that sat on top of an X-ray light box, and she would reassemble the parts of the baby. Please understand me, I'm talking about first trimester abortion. Yes, there are parts. Yes, they must be reassembled. The baby is fully formed. Every internal organ is formed by 12 weeks gestation. So yes, there are parts, even earlier than 12 weeks. Once all of the parts are reassembled, that POC tech will take everything, dump it into a red biohazard Ziploc sort of bag, and those bags will go into a freezer in the POC lab that the staff jokingly called the nursery. And once a week, a company, a biohazard medical waste company like Stericycle, will come into the facility and they will pick up all the red bags of babies where they are taken to their facility to be incinerated. That's if the abortion facility decides they don't want to just put them in their industrial size garbage disposal and grind them up and put them into the water waste treatment facilities. That is first trimester abortion. We have already heard the testimonies from the opposition calling women who are pregnant, pregnant persons, because now we live in a time where people say it is not just women who get pregnant. Now apparently men can get pregnant. And that shows you just how detached from science the pro-choice side is on this issue. Fact, only women get pregnant. You gotta have lady parts to have a baby. That's science. Science also tells us that from the moment of conception, unique and individual and unrepeatable DNA is formed. That DNA is human. Never in the history of the world has a woman ever delivered a cat or a dog or any other species other than human. That's science. Our history tells us time and time again that it is unjust to take the life of an innocent human being. It was unjust to dehumanize an entire segment of people when we were working to abolish slavery. It was unjust to dehumanize an entire group of Jewish people in the Holocaust. But those two examples that I just gave you only exist because our society was willing to turn a blind eye, look a human person in the face, and say, that is not a human being. That is not scientific. Now we are living in such depravity that there are people, like the people that oppose this bill, that are willing to say, I know it's a human being. I know it has a heartbeat. I know there is life there. And I know it is innocent. And I'm willing to kill it. We have sunk to a new low in our society. And it is time for us to rectify what we have done. So if you are a person here who has had an abortion, I encourage you to seek healing, because abortion is not normal. Taking the life of an innocent human being that is your own flesh and blood and your own DNA, it's not normal. And there are healing resources available. And to the people in here who work in the abortion industry, I encourage you to seek healing from a ministry called And Then There Were None. We can get you out of the industry, and we can get you into line of work that you can actually be proud of. And to the ACLU, I can say affirmatively, we look forward to your lawsuit.
Abby Johnson, whose story is the movie Unplanned, revealing the truth about abortion and the truth about the mentality behind it. Abby is doing incredible work. She mentioned the ministry, and then there were none. It's her ministry. She's helping people come out of the abortion industry and find productive work that they can actually be proud of. And it's a story that you and I should be aware of. And what she talked about, we should be aware of as well. Because the abortion industry is lying to everyone and is justifying what they do. All for money. It's not a noble cause to deny truth. What they are doing is all about the bottom line. And they lie about their bottom line as well. I encourage you this weekend, go see the movie Unplanned. Learn about the truth about abortion and the abortion industry. Find out what's really going on. And we'll see you Monday on The Daily Perspective. God bless. Bye-bye.